he said wearily.
There's more to life than regretting the past. Let's get on with today, and the here and now.
Why did you say you loved me when you didn't?
She screamed.
You had your charms then, Ellie. You were sweeter then.
I had hopes then, Damien,
she said bitterly.
Ellie, tell me what Vera is threatening to do if she comes back. I'll kill that girl if she does one more thing to hurt Adrina.
Oh, God, you made her what she is. Behind every evil thing Vera did was frustration and pain from feeling rejected by her own father. You know what Vera's threatening.
When first you and Lucetta told me what you planned to do about Adrina, I thought the two of you fools. But still, I sat back and said nothing, hoping it would work. I gave up trying to please you long ago, for I don't know how to subjugate myself to your whims. It's Adrina I want to save. There was a time when I thought that girl a weakling, but she's proved she is not. I thought she had no spirit, no fight, but I applaud each time she slaps back at you. So sit there and glare those damn black eyes at me. I don't give a damn. But tell Adrina the truth, before Vera does.
There's a fortune in this house, and part of it could be yours,
he said to her in a cajoling voice.
But none of it will be yours if ever you or your daughter say one word to Adrina.
The persuasion left his voice, and it turned colder.
How could you go anywhere without money, Ellie? Who would want you but me?
You don't want me!
She yelled with so much anger I fell upon my knees and put an eye to the keyhole, just as Vera used to do so many years ago when Mama fought with him.
You use me, Damien, as you use all women.
Oh. There was my prim and prissy aunt, pacing my papa's bedroom dressed in nothing but a filmy peignoir that had once belonged to my mother. She was naked underneath. To my amazement, she looked better without clothes than with them. Her breasts weren't large and full like Mama's had been, but smaller, firmer, and very high. My aunt's nipples were wine-colored and very large. How old was she, anyway? For the life of me, I couldn't remember my mother telling me her age, and she'd been vain enough not to want her birth date carved on her tombstone. Many times I'd heard her tell Papa not to let the newspapers publish her age. It wasn't the first time I'd realized that no one's birthday was nearly as important as mine. My aunt's long dark hair was loose and flowing, fanning out as she spun around. I stared at my aunt, wondering why she hadn't found another man after losing Papa to my mother. As she was now, she seemed very exciting and challenging, especially if I could judge from the way Papa's eyes lit up even as he yelled at her and tried to talk her out of going to New York. Suddenly he lunged, grabbed her by her waist, and dragged her kicking and fighting onto his lap. She struck at him time and again as he laughed and ducked and then managed to crush his lips down on hers. All the fight went out of her then as her arms hungrily embraced him, and she held his head to hers, moaning as his lips began to explore all the crevices and hills of her body. I watched, shocked, as he kissed her breasts while his hand fondled beneath her peignoir.
"You're wrong, Ellie,"
he muttered, his face flushed with passion as he stood and carried her to his bed.
"I do love you in my own way, just as I loved Lucky in a very special way. It's not my fault if I can't keep love after the object of it is dead. I have to go on, don't I? And if you think I love myself more than I love anyone else, then I haven't tried to deceive you, have I? At least respect me for being honest, if you can't respect me for anything else."
Now I knew for a certainty, with no more guilty speculating, just who the man was my mother had stolen from her half-sister. I also knew definitely my father was also Vera's father. The more I thought about it, the more uncomfortable I became about my mother. Had she deliberately stolen her older sister's lover? Standing, I left them on the bed. Now my aunt and my father were lovers again. Strangely, after more hours of thought, I wasn't as shocked as once I would have been, or as distressed. Perhaps fate did work in mysterious ways to see all things worked out equally. It also occurred to me that perhaps the two of them might have been lovers even when my mother was alive, right in this house under her own roof. Certainly there were enough unused rooms that would have given them the place and opportunity. My memories went flittering back to tea times, when Aunt Mercy Marie's photograph was on the piano, and in my head, the echoes of all the harsh words exchanged between my mother and her sister resounded. Not once had my aunt showed one indication that she was anything but jealous of my mother. No, I decided. Aunt Elizabeth had too much respect for herself and scorn for Papa than to have had a clandestine affair with the man who'd rejected her once when Lucetta Lana Whitefern was still alive. After I labeled their relationship as Papa's need and my aunt's reward, I put away their secret, determined never to let them know I knew. It was a long time before my aunt ever mentioned Vera again. The Christmas I was 17, Arden put an engagement ring on my finger, then pulled me into his arms.
Now you can stop fearing any year with a 9. When you are 19, you'll be my wife, and I'll take care to see that nothing bad ever happens to you.
That June, I graduated from high school. I still wore the engagement ring Arden had given me around my neck on the chain that used to suspend my little birthstone ring. I began to notice a steady change in my aunt, who didn't seem as contented as before. I'd never thought of her as happy until I faced her unhappiness. She seldom went anywhere. Other women her age belonged to bridge clubs and attended coffee clatches, but my aunt didn't have a single friend. What clothes she wore at home were old, and the new ones she wore to go out were chosen by Papa, just as he often selected my best clothes. She didn't have one hobby other than knitting as she watched those everlasting soap operas. She had me, she had Sylvia, and Papa, and that eternal cooking and cleaning, and the reward of having a few hours to sit before her choice of new color TV sets, and I'd never realized that she needed or deserved more. She didn't complain. There were no obvious physical symptoms to make me think she was ill, but something had changed. She often paused in her work to stare into space. She began to read the Bible as if looking for solace. She took long hikes alone, avoiding the woods and sticking to the shores of the river. Sometimes I walked beside her, neither of us speaking much. She'd stop and stare down at the ground with undue interest. She gazed up into the trees and at the sky with the same kind of intense curiosity as if she'd never taken notice of nature before, and it was brand new to her. She stared at the squirrels that infested all our impressive old trees. I told her I was sure they had been here when Columbus set sail from Spain, and my aunt had scoffed and told me I was unduly romantic like my mother. Practicality was my aunt's virtue. Yet, if she hadn't won Papa, why hadn't she set her sights on another man? In no way would my unrealistic and romantic mother have remained unmarried all her life. But how could I say any of this when I was just beginning to understand my aunt? And with the understanding came the love that had been lacking in our relationship before. I wanted to talk to her, but it was difficult to communicate with a woman who'd never learned the art of conversation. One day she surprised me.
"Do you love that young man?"
"Arden? Oh, yes, of course I do. He makes me feel so safe, and beautiful, too. He tells me all the time how wonderful I am and how much he loves me." My own words gave me pause. It was like I was letting Arden convince me I had to love him because he loved me. Frowning, my aunt glanced my way briefly, then looked away.
"I hope you'll always feel that way about him. People change, Adrina. He'll change. You'll change. You'll see each other differently because of new perspectives. You may not love him at 20 as much as you do at 18. You're a beautiful young woman and could pick from the best the world has to offer. But you have even more, something far better than beauty, for that won't last. You think it will, pray it will, but it goes sooner or later. The more beauty you have, the worse it hurts when it's gone. In one thing, your father is right. You are special."
"No, I'm not." My head bowed in embarrassment. "I have no special gifts. My dreams are only ordinary."
"Oh, that,"
she said as if she'd known all along.
"What difference does it make how you achieve your goals? At least your father leaves you alone now at nights and you no longer scream out. I've always considered him a monster for forcing you into that room when you didn't want to go there, but that's beside the point. Without you, Damien wouldn't have fared so well, so don't let him take credit for all his good fortunes. You motivate him and give him reason for accumulating wealth.
To travel life's road alone isn't easy, and no one knows that better than I. Damien could never have survived your mother's death without you. Men are strange creatures, Adrina. Remember that. So stand up for your rights and demand a college education. Don't let him talk you out of what you want. He'll try to keep you from marrying, from ever leaving him. Don't let him succeed in chasing Arden away.
He couldn't do that, or else Arden would have disappeared a long time ago. I know Papa's tried. Arden's told me he's tried to make him stay away from me.
All right, then. But when you see your chance to escape, seize the opportunity and flee. You don't need to live near those woods and in that house filled with all its unhappy memories. Why, it would even be better if you moved into that cottage with his poor crippled mother.
I gasped. You know about Billy? I didn't think anyone knew.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Adrina. Everybody knows about Billy Lowe. There was a time when her face was plastered on every magazine cover, and when she lost one leg and then the other, that made the headlines. You were too young at the time to notice. Besides, your father only allowed you to read the financial pages.
She paused, as if ready to say more, but seemed to think better of it.
Don't you realize your father has been coaching you about the stock market since the day you were born? Adrina, use your knowledge and benefit yourself, not him.
What does she mean? I asked, but she refused to explain. Still, I loved her for trying to help me, never suspecting that maybe she was waiting for me to try and help her. Later that night, I decided she was depressed because Papa didn't marry her, depressed because she hadn't had but one Christmas card and one telephone call from Vera in 5 years. How hateful of Vera to treat her mother as if she'd never existed. I had to have a talk with Papa soon, very soon. But Papa was seldom home, and when he was, my aunt was there, and I didn't want her to know I was going to urge him to marry her. How complicated everything was. Those were almost the first words I said to Arden when he came home for a weekend. My aunt knew all about your mother's condition. He smiled, kissed me 4 or 5 times, held me for long, long moments, so hard I felt every muscle in his strong young body. I felt something else, too, making me draw away and glance downward. That bulging hardness clamored the wind chimes in my head, filled me with frightened panic so I felt weak and ready to run. He noticed and seemed hurt, then embarrassed so much he held his top coat to cover what betrayed his excitement. Lightly, he said,
"Well, I did what I could and she did what she could, and I'm sure you did what you could, but secrets will out, and maybe it's for the best."
He went on to speak of our marriage soon after he finished college, and that was only weeks away. Again, panic visited and told me I needed more time. We were in the woods again, on the way to my home, when he embraced me, much more passionately than ever before. Until he grabbed me, I'd heard the little birds overhead singing, but the moment he touched me, the birds turned off. I froze and became stiff from one too intimate caress. I jerked from his arms and turned my back, clamping my hands over my ears to shut out the clamor of the wind chimes, which I shouldn't be hearing way out here. Tenderly, Arden slipped his arms about my waist and pulled me back against him.
"It's all right, darling. I understand. You're still very young, and I've got to keep remembering that. I want to make the rest of your life happy to reimburse you for...
And there he stumbled, making me yank away again and whirl to confront him. Reimburse me for what?
For all the things that shadow your eyes. I want my love to erase your fears about everything. I want our child to respond to your care as Sylvia never has.
Child, child, child. I didn't need another child. Arden seldom spoke Sylvia's name, as if he too wanted to pretend she didn't exist. He did nothing to harm her, but nothing to assist her either. Arden, if you can't love Sylvia, then you can't love me. She's part of the rest of my life. Please realize that now and tell me if you can accept her, or else let's say goodbye before this goes on any further. He glanced to where Sylvia was winding round and round the tallest tree in the woods. Her slender arm was outstretched so her fingers could lightly trail over the bark as endlessly she circled. I told myself she was trying to communicate with the tree by feeling its skin, and there was some sense in what she did. That's the way she was. Always active, never still while she was awake, always doing something that was essentially nothing. Right to the edge of the woods, Arden escorted me and Sylvia. I was feeling right enough by this time to exchange happy plans with him for that evening and the next day. My father and aunt were in the kitchen arguing. The minute they heard me enter the house, their voices stilled, and I heard that unnatural quiet that comes to announce that you've interrupted something private. I hurried up the stairs with Sylvia. Arden returned to college for his last semester, and I settled down to helping Papa turn this house into better than new. Now that Papa was noted for making everything he touched turn to gold, Aunt Elsbeth liked to tell him acidly that soon his head would be too large to come through the double front doors. Literally thumbing his nose at her, Papa ordered workmen to tear down walls, to make some rooms larger and others smaller. He had bathrooms added to his rooms and to mine, and two more as well. He decided he needed two large walk-in closets to accommodate his many suits and dozens of pairs of expensive shoes. My own room was enlarged, and a dressing room was added. And with my private bath, I felt splendidly decadent, with all those crystal and gold fixtures and electric lights framing my dressing mirror. In the end, it seemed we'd have a home not equal to, but surpassing what it had been. Papa searched until he found all the genuine antiques the White Ferns had sold years ago, proving that all my aunt had thrown in my mother's face about the fakes in our house was true. Even that grand bed Mama had believed was the real thing proved to be just a reproduction. I listened with incredulity to all he planned to do. He had such miserly ways about petty things and such extravagant ideas when it came to this house and his clothes. To everyone in the financial world, he was the messiah of the stock market. That gave him so much confidence he began to write a stock advice newsletter in his spare time. He listed the stocks to buy, to short, to sell, and then sold what he told others to buy long the day his newsletter was delivered. He covered his shorts when others went in too short. He bought what he told his clients to sell. In a few hours of trading, he'd end up with thousands of dollars in profits. It seemed unfair, and I told him this, but he replied by saying that all of life was unfair.
A battle of wits to survive, Adrina. The victories in life belong to those who move fastest and most cleverly, and it's not cheating. After all, the public should have better sense, shouldn't they?
Papa sent his stock advice letter to a friend who lived in San Francisco, and his friend had a publishing business, and all such friends were willing to collaborate in the fraud. Then came that wonderful day when Arden was due home from college having received his diploma. Papa had been so heartless as to not allow me to attend his graduation ceremonies. Unknown to Papa, who'd have me always dependent on him, Arden had taught me to drive years ago. Therefore, it was easy to borrow one of Papa's older cars while he was at work, and with Sylvia dressed in her best, I headed for the airport terminal to wait for his plane to land. The moment was at hand. I was foolish enough to think I was ready for anything. A long day's journey. Arden came running to me in the airport. Soon, I was so tightly embraced and so fervently kissed that I pulled away, overwhelmed with his emotions. Frantically, I looked for Sylvia, who disappeared the moment Arden seized me in his arms. After an hour's search, we found my small sister staring at the colorful magazines. She was completely disheveled by this time, and I'd wanted Arden to see how pretty she was when she was fresh and clean. To make matters worse, someone who'd meant to be kind had given her a chocolate ice cream cone. Half the ice cream was on her face, part in her hair and in her nostrils, and very little of what was left was finding its melting way into her mouth. I took it from her grasp and held it for her to lick. Worse than anything was the stench that came from her diapers. I had managed to half-toilet train Sylvia, but she still had enough accidents that I kept her in diapers. There was little Arden and I could talk about on the way home when every move Sylvia made was an embarrassment to both of us.
"I'll see you later this evening,"
he said, as I let him out on his corner. He tried not to wrinkle his nose when Sylvia clawed at him for affection. No sooner were Sylvia and I inside the house than I heard the loud voice of my father. A terrible argument was going on in the kitchen. I paused in the doorway with my arm protectively around Sylvia's thin shoulders. Aunt Elsbeth was dashing about, frantically preparing another of those troublesome gourmet meals that Papa loved so much. She wore a new dress, a very pretty, feminine dress that might well have been taken from my mother's closet, where all her clothes still hung, growing old and musty-smelling. Aunt Elsbeth wielded a huge cleaver so ferociously, I wondered why Papa didn't fear for his life when she glared at him with that thing in her hand. He didn't seem afraid as he bellowed again,
"Ellie, what the hell is wrong with you?"
"You need to ask,"
she yelled back, slamming down her knife and whirling to confront him.
"You didn't come home until 5:30 this morning. You're sleeping with someone."
"Who?"
"It's really none of your business,"
he answered coldly. I shuddered from his flat tone. Couldn't he tell she loved him and was doing the best she could to please him?
"None of my business, hey?"
she stormed. Her long, handsome face flamed redder.
"We'll see about that, Damien Adair."
Her dark eyes furious, my aunt seized up the large bowl full of her chopped vegetables and quickly dumped them down the garbage disposal. Then she was emptying all the steaming pots and pans into the sink.
"Stop that,"
roared Papa, appearing beside himself.
"That food cost me good money. Elsbeth, behave yourself."
"To hell with you,"
she screamed back at him. She tore off her apron and hurled it in his face, then shouted,
"I need a life of my own, Damien, a life far from here. I'm sick of being your housekeeper, your cook, your gardener, your laundry expert, and most of all, I'm sick of being your now-and-then bed partner. I'm also sick of taking care of your idiot daughter, and as for your Adrina..."
"Yes?"
drawled Papa, his eyes narrowing, his voice taking on that deadly, silky tone that made the hackles on my neck rise.
"What is it you want to say about my Adrina?"
I quivered as I drew Sylvia into my embrace, trying to cover her ears and her eyes and shield her as much as possible from this. I had to hear what they were going to say. They didn't seem to see either of us. I watched the color in my aunt's usually pale face drain away. Nervously, my aunt fluttered her hands around him in a helpless, appealing way.
"I wouldn't tell her, Damien. Really, I wouldn't. I would never tell Adrina anything to make her unhappy. Just let me go. Give me what is mine and let me go."
"And what is it that is yours, Ellie?"
asked Papa in that same oily voice, sitting at the kitchen table with his elbows propped there and his hands templed under his chin. I didn't trust him when he looked like that.
"You know what is mine,"
she said in a hard and very determined voice.
"After you lost Lucetta's inheritance, you went after the little I had left. You promised to pay it back doubled in 3 months. What a fool I was to have believed in you. But hasn't that always been my weakness, believing in you? Now, Damien, give me back my $2,000. Doubled."
"Where would you go if you left here, Ellie? What would you do?"
He picked up the little paring knife she'd used to peel potatoes and began to clean under his nails, which were always clean.
"I'm going to my daughter, to your daughter, too, though you don't want to admit she is. She's in that huge city all alone, cast off by that man she ran away with."
He stayed her with his upraised hand like a king who had to turn his head away from a distasteful subject.
"I don't care to hear more. You're a fool if you go to her. She doesn't love you, Ellie. She just wants to take what you'll bring. I heard in the village that Lamar Rensdale killed himself. No doubt your daughter had a lot to do with his suicide."
"Damien, please,"
she wailed, all her fire gone now.
"Just give me what is mine. That's all I want. I'll go and never bother you again. I swear you'll not hear from me or Vera. Just give me enough so I won't starve."
"I am not giving you one red cent,"
said Papa coldly.
"As long as you stay in my home, you'll have food to eat and clothes to wear, a place to sleep and money to spend on the trifles you need. But hell will freeze over before I give you money to go and live with that hellcat you gave birth to. And remember this, Ellie. Once you leave, you can't come back. Not again." Life is hard on the outside, Ellie. Very hard. You're not a young woman anymore. And even if it isn't heaven here, it isn't hell either. Think twice before you leave me.
Isn't it hell?
Her voice rose to a shriek.
It's hell with a capital H, Damien. Pure, unadulterated hell. What am I here but an unpaid housekeeper? After Lucetta died and you began to look my way with kind eyes, I thought you'd love me again. You came to my bedroom when you needed release, and I gave you that. I should have denied you, but I wanted you, as I've always wanted you. When you lived in this house with my sister, I stayed awake at night picturing the two of you in your bedroom, and how I envied her and hated her. I began to hate you too, even more than I did her. Now I wish to God I'd never come back with Vera. There was a young doctor in the hospital where I gave birth to Vera who wanted me to marry him, but I had your image engraved on my brain. It was you I wanted. God alone knows why, when I knew even then what you were, and still are. Give me my money, Damien,
she said, striding toward his office as I backed away, pulling Sylvia with me. She didn't see us as we crouched in a dim corner of the wide hall cluttered with furniture. In a few seconds, while my father sat at the table, she was back, carrying my father's corporation checkbook.
Right,
she ordered.
Make it 25,000. After all, this was my home too, and I should get something for abandoning my lifetime privilege to live under this roof. Wasn't it considerate of my sister to include me in her will? It was almost as if she meant for her husband to be part of her legacy. But I don't need you nearly as much as I need the money.
He gave the blue checkbook a funny look, then took it and with precision wrote a long blue check, which he handed to her with a tight, ironic smile. She glanced at the figure, then glanced again.
Damien, I didn't ask for 50,000.
Don't leave me, Ellie. Say you're sorry for all those ugly words. Tear up the check or keep it, but don't go.
Rising again to his feet, he tried to take her in his arms. She kept staring at the check. As I watched, I saw a blush of excitement heat her face. Then Papa seized her from behind and turned her around to crush his full lips down on her thin ones. Even as she tried to struggle, the check slipped from her grasp and fluttered to the floor. Greatly to my surprise, after all she'd screamed at him, her arms slipped eagerly around his neck, and she responded to his kisses with just as much ardor as he showed. Helplessly, as if unable to resist, she allowed him to pick her up. He headed for the back stairs with my aunt in his arms. Feeling numb and dazed, a queasiness in my stomach, I dragged my trembling sister into the kitchen. I picked up the check and stared at the $50,000 and no cents made out to Elsbeth Whitefern. I pinned the check to the corkboard where my aunt was sure to see it in the morning, and with it she could leave, if she wanted to. All that I'd heard and seen in the kitchen churned in my head that night, like a carousel of skeletal ponies, going round and round and up, down. Lamar Rensdale had killed himself? Why? How did the villagers know? Had his death been in the local newspapers, and if it had, why hadn't I seen it? It had to be that Vera had called and told my aunt, and she was so grief-stricken now she needed someone, and the only one she had was her mother. Had Vera truly loved my handsome music teacher? If so, why had he taken his own life? I sighed and heard the wind answer, and that was about all the answer I was likely to get. Deep in the recesses of my mind, I avoided the biggest question of all. What was it my aunt promised she wouldn't tell me? What was the secret that would make me so unhappy if I learned it? Bad dreams woke me up early the next morning. At the top of the front stairs, with the early sun pouring through the stained glass, I stopped short and froze. Down on the foyer floor, with the sun coming through that rich, colorful glass to throw geometric designs on the floor, my aunt was sprawled face down and very still. I took the steps slowly, slowly, like someone sleepwalking and fearful every second of facing too many horrors. She's not dead, I kept telling myself. Not dead, not dead, only hurt. I had to call an ambulance before it was too late. She very seldom used the front stairs because the back ones took her down so near the kitchen, which was where she stayed almost all day. I thought I heard a faint sound from the kitchen, like a door being carefully closed. Tentatively, I approached her. "Aunt Ellie?" I whispered fearfully. I knelt to roll over the body of my aunt, and then I stared into her face. "Don't be dead," I pleaded over and over. She was difficult to move, like lead. Her head lolled unnaturally loose as I shoved and pushed and finally had her on her back. Her dark and fiery eyes gazed glassily at the intricately carved ceiling. Her skin had a sickly greenish-gray color. Dead. She was dead. Dressed for traveling in a suit I'd never seen before, she was dead and already traveling to compare his heaven and hell with here. There was a scream stuck in my throat. Rasping sobs kept it from sounding. I didn't want her dead. I wanted her to have that check and have the chance to enjoy herself, and at the same time I wanted her to stay on here with us. Crying freely now, I began to straighten the bow at the neck of her new white blouse. I tugged down her skirt so her slip wouldn't show and arranged her broken legs beneath her so they didn't look broken anymore. With that huge bun at the back of her neck, her head kept falling to a crazy angle. Crying harder, I undid her figure-eight knot and spread her hair so it looked pretty. Then her head stayed in position. Everything done now, I heard the screams. Over and over, someone was screaming. It was me. Out of the kitchen, heavy feet came running fast, a voice calling my name. I whirled to see Sylvia tripping awkwardly down the stairs, babbling to herself as she tried to hold on to the banister and the prisms at the same time. She was coming to me as fast as possible, a big smile on her pretty face, and her eyes were focused. I thought she was going to speak when suddenly from behind me a voice,
"Who was screaming?"
asked Papa as he raced into the foyer. He stopped short and stared at Aunt Ellie.
"Ellie? Is that Ellie?"
he asked, pale and shocked-looking. Shadows seemed to immediately darken his face. He hurried to kneel where I'd knelt only a moment ago.
"Oh, Ellie, did you have to do this?"
he asked with a sob, lifting her so that she was cradled in his arms and her rubbery neck stretched too long.
"I gave you a check, Ellie. More than you asked for. You could have gone. You didn't have to fall down the stairs just to hurt me."
Seeming to remember my presence, he paused and asked,
"How did this happen?"
His eyes narrowed as I pulled Sylvia into my embrace. I wanted to defend her from the hard way he was staring at those prisms clutched in her hand. Holding her head against my breasts, I faced him. I was coming downstairs when I saw her. She was face down on the floor, like she'd fallen. Again, he was staring at my aunt's dead face.
"She very seldom used the front stairs. You turned her over?"
How empty his eyes. How flat his tone. Was he hurting like I was hurting? "Yes, I turned her over."
"You hurt us last night, didn't you?"
he asked accusingly. Before I could answer, he was picking up the purse I hadn't noticed and rummaging through it.
"No check,"
he said as if surprised.
"We did quarrel last night, Adrina, but later on we made it up. I asked her to marry me. She seemed very happy when she went back to her room."
He eased my aunt back onto the floor and stood up.
"She wouldn't leave me. I know she wouldn't do that. Not after I asked her. And she wanted that. I know she wanted that."
Then he was taking the steps three at a time, standing there. I grabbed hold of Sylvia and forced her to run with me to the back stairs, hoping we'd reach my aunt's room first and I'd be there to see what he did with the check when he found it. Even if his way was the longest way, he was in her room before I could drag Sylvia there. Her suitcases lay open on her bed. Frantically, he was tearing through her things, opening and closing every handbag she owned.
"I can't find it. Adrina, I have to find that check. Did you see it?"
I told him then that I'd pinned it to the corkboard so she'd see it first thing in the morning. He groaned and wiped his hand over his lips.
"Adrina, run and see if it's still there."
With Sylvia beside me, stumbling along as I tried to hurry, I reached the kitchen and found the corkboard empty. I reported that to Papa. He sighed heavily, glanced again at the still form of my aunt in her crisp, dark suit, then dialed the police.
"Now,"
he instructed before I went upstairs to dress,
"you just tell them exactly how you found her, but don't tell them she was leaving. I'll put away all her clothes. I can't believe she was leaving anyway. She had such idiotic things in her suitcases, clothes that wouldn't even fit her now. Adrina, I think it would be a good idea if you took off your aunt's traveling suit and put on one of her house dresses."
I didn't want to, though I understood his reasoning, and with his help we managed to take off her jacket, blouse, and skirt. Soon she was wearing a plaid cotton dress. I was trembling long before we were finished. Hurriedly, I did up her hair while Papa held her in position. My fingers shook so the knot had never looked so messy. No sooner was I dressed myself than the police were jabbing at the doorbell. Huddled with Sylvia at my side on the purple velvet chaise, I watched and listened as my father gave the two policemen an explanation of my aunt's fall down the stairs. He appeared calm, only a little distraught, with worry and sadness making him seem genuinely grief-stricken. The policemen seemed to consider him charming, very likable, and I was thinking unmercifully what an actor he was. He would never have married her. What a lie to tell me that, as if he considered me so gullible I'd believe anything.
"Miss Adair,"
said the older of the policemen, his face kind and grandfatherly.
"You were the one who found her. She was on her back?"
"No, sir. She was face down. I didn't want to think she was dead, so I had to turn her over to check." I bowed my head and began to cry again. His voice was sympathetic when he asked,
"Was your aunt subject to dizzy spells?"
On and on the questions came until Papa fell into a chair and bowed his head into his hands. Somehow, I forgot to mention I'd heard the back door softly close, but perhaps I'd only imagined I'd heard that.
"Where were you when your sister-in-law fell?"
asked the older policeman, looking directly at Papa.
"I was asleep,"
said Papa, lifting his head and meeting the eyes of the policeman squarely. Even as my aunt's body was lifted and put on a stretcher, covered over and taken to the police morgue, the questions went on and on. I was numb and feeling dazed, and I was forgetful of Sylvia, who hadn't eaten breakfast. That was the first thing I did after the police left. Papa sat down to eat what I prepared, too, not saying a word to me, only chewing and swallowing automatically. Yet later on, when I was in my room and Sylvia was napping in hers, I kept thinking of my aunt and the argument she'd had with Papa. She had wanted to go to Vera, and now she was dead. The more I thought about that, the more alarmed I became about my own situation. How many times had my aunt told me to escape when I had the opportunity? Hundreds of times. Now, while Papa was off somewhere making funeral arrangements, was my chance. "Where did you go when fate kept breaking your heart over and over again?" A little voice inside me kept whispering that Papa thought baby girls were born every day just to serve his needs when they grew older. And when he was old and ugly, he was thinking money would buy them. And when even money couldn't, he'd still have me left to take care of him and keep him from those institutions he seemed to hate. Even as I thought that, behind that was another whispering menace. That awful thing my aunt had said to him about how he was capable of doing anything and everything to get his way. I dashed about madly, throwing my clothes into suitcases. I ran for Sylvia's room and gathered up what she'd need, too. We were leaving. Leaving before something awful happened to us, too. Now, while Papa was away and couldn't stop us. As I pulled Sylvia along with me, we had to pass the front salon, and in the door I paused as I said goodbye to my mother's grand piano. It seemed I could see her sitting there playing her favorite Rachmaninoff melodies, one of which had been given lyrics in a popular ballad. "Full moon and empty arms." Steel arms, that's the kind my father had. Killing arms of love. As I stood there, I think I forgot every hateful, mean thing my aunt had ever said or done to me and Sylvia. I shoved into the darkest corners of my brain all she'd said to tell me I was too sensitive and unable to cope with reality, and remembered only the good things. The thoughtful deeds. I forgave her everything. Pulling Sylvia with me, I picked up the two heavy suitcases and began our journey through the woods to reach the cottage on the far side.
Billy looked sober when I told her my plans. Arden was delighted.
Of course. What a wonderful idea. But why can't your aunt look out for Sylvia? It's not going to be much of a honeymoon if we have to drag her along with us.
With my head low and my voice low, too, I told them what had happened and that it was escape now or never. I had told everything in such a way that Papa had seemed blameless. Why had I spared him? Billy cuddled me in her strong arms.
We have to think some things are for the best when there is nothing we can do about it anyway. You've told me your aunt has acted all winter like she wasn't happy or she was ill. Maybe she did have a dizzy spell. Now there's no reason why you can't leave Sylvia here with me if you truly feel you have to escape like this. I just want you to be sure you love my son enough, Adrina. Don't marry Arden today and regret it tomorrow.
I will love Arden forever, I cried fervently, fully believing this was the truth. Arden smiled at me lovingly.
I can echo that,
he said softly.
All my life will be devoted to making you happy.
Nervously, I glanced from Sylvia, who started to scream when Billy tried to touch her, to Billy, then Arden. I couldn't leave my sister with Billy, whom she seemed to fear and dislike. I'd promised Papa a long time ago that I'd take care of Sylvia. She was my responsibility, and I couldn't leave her. My heart seemed to stop as I waited for Arden's response after I told him Sylvia had to go with us. He blanched, then quietly agreed. Perhaps Billy was right to look worried as she waved goodbye. I Take Thee, Arden. In a small town in North Carolina where the law permitted couples to be married on the same day they took out a marriage license, Arden and I were wedded by a fat, balding justice of the peace, while his plain-looking, skinny wife played atrocious wedding music on a worn-out old organ. When the brief ceremony was over, she sang, without our request, I Love You Truly. Sylvia perched restlessly on what looked like a bridge chair, swinging her feet as she played with the crystal prisms and babbled incessantly to herself, as if suddenly she'd found her voice and was going to use it, even if she couldn't say meaningful words. Or was she trying to sing? It was difficult to concentrate on our vows.
In a few years we'll do it all over again in the proper way,
promised Arden as we headed south toward a famous beach and a fine hotel.
You look so pretty in that violet suit. It matches your eyes. You have such wonderful eyes, so deep. I wonder if ever in a million years I will have time to find out all your secrets.
Uneasily, I fidgeted. I have no secrets. By nightfall, we were registered in the hotel. Soon we were in the dining room, where all the guests stared at Sylvia shoving food into her wide-open mouth without benefit of cutlery. I've been working on that, too, I said with apology to Arden. Sooner or later she'll catch on. He smiled and said that we'd both teach Sylvia how to be the perfect lady. I was glad dinner took a long time. Only too soon would come the time I dreaded most. Try as I would, that dark, fugitive memory of the wet woodsy day kept flashing before my eyes. Sex had killed the first Adrina, and it was my wedding night. Arden wouldn't hurt me, I said again to reassure myself. It wouldn't be awful with him. The pain and the terror and the ugliness all belonged to that crazy rocking chair dream of the first Adrina. It didn't belong in my life with a wedding certificate in my purse. Arden was wonderfully considerate, tolerant of Sylvia as he simultaneously tried to be romantic with me, a nearly impossible task. I felt sorry for him as he tried so hard. He'd rented a double suite of rooms with a connecting door so Sylvia could have her own bathroom, and in her bathroom, I slowly, painstakingly did what I had to. When I tucked her into the wide bed, I gave her strict orders to stay in bed or else. The last thing I did was put half a glass of water on the nightstand. Drink as little as possible so you won't have an accident during the night. I kissed her and reluctantly withdrew when she drifted into sleep, still clutching the crystal prisms. In the bedroom Arden and I were to share, he paced the floor impatiently while I took an hour-long tub bath and shampooed my hair. Next, I rolled it on curlers, used my hairdryer, creamed my face, and while my hair finished drying, I removed my nail polish and did my nails all over again. My toenails, too. Now that my hair was thoroughly dry, I had to wait for my nails to dry as well. When they seemed solid enough, I carefully took out the curlers and brushed the tight curls into loose, soft waves. I sprayed on cologne and puffed on talcum and finally dropped a fancy nightgown down over my head. Stupid, stupid, I was calling myself, for being afraid to go to my husband. I tugged at the revealing nightgown Billy had given me on my last birthday, wishing it weren't so transparent, though I guessed she'd given it to me for just this reason. It had a matching peignoir of violet with creamy lace that wasn't placed to conceal anything. When I finished every last detail I could think of, I sat on the edge of the bathtub and just stared at the closed door, dreading to open it and go through. I kept seeing Mama as I sat there, so much like I looked, only older. I thought of Papa and the belt he used for a whip. I envisioned again all that had happened to the first Adrina that awful day in the rain when she'd been found dead under a golden rain tree. A child raped. It wasn't fair or right. I began to tremble, and beads of sweat came to dampen my armpits despite the deodorant I wore. I saw Vera rolling about on the floor with Lamar Rensdale and the violent way he'd taken her, like a rutting animal. I couldn't go through with it. I didn't want to go through with it. Standing, I began to unfasten my peignoir. I couldn't let him see me in this bit of nothing.
Adrina,
called Arden from the other side of the locked bathroom door, his voice beginning to sound angry.
What's taking you so long? You've been in there for hours.
Give me 5 more minutes, I answered nervously. Already I'd promised him that 2 times before. I fiddled with my hair, the peignoir, taking it off, thinking about pulling on my panties or getting fully dressed again. I began to chew on my fingernails, a habit long ago abandoned. I told myself again that Arden had known me since I was 7, seen me in play clothes, in a bathing suit, in all sorts of conditions. But he'd never seen me in a see-through nightie just before intimate relations. Yet he was my husband now. Why did I have to be so worried? I wouldn't end up dead under a golden rain tree or on the floor, nor would he use his belt. Would he?
1 more minute,
reminded Arden.
I'm holding you to your time limit, and no more excuses.
His tone was so grim it scared me. He'd never sounded so harsh before. Oh, it was just like I'd heard Aunt Mercy Marie, Aunt Elsbeth, and my mama say, you never knew a man until you married him.
I'm watching the second hand,
he informed me.
You've got 30 seconds now. If you're not out when you promised, I'm coming in. Even if I have to kick down that door, I'm coming in.
I shrank back against the wall, my heart pounding as I panicked. I took a step closer to the door, said a quick prayer for the soul of my aunt and asked her forgiveness for not attending her funeral.
Time's up,
he yelled.
Stand back. I'm coming through.
He'd hurt himself if he backed up and ran forward to slam his shoulder through the door. He kicked the door twice, but it didn't budge. I heard him swear and guessed he was going to throw himself against the door next. Hurriedly, I turned the lock and threw open the door. It was his misfortune to hurl himself forward at the very second I swung the door inward. He slammed hard against the tile wall opposite the door. He crashed against it, then slid to the floor and lay there looking stunned and in terrible pain. Rushing forward, I knelt to hover above him. Oh, Arden, I'm sorry. So sorry. I didn't know you'd really try to break down the door. To my surprise, he laughed and grabbed for me. He began to smother me with kisses. His words came between them.
I've heard that brides can get stage fright, but Adrina, I thought you loved me.
More kisses on my face, neck, the swell of my breasts.
It's not as if we just met.
Jerking away, I rose to my feet. Painfully he stood too before he leaned over and felt for broken bones.
I guess nothing is permanently damaged,
he said with a good-natured grin. Tenderly, he took me in his arms and gazed deeply into my eyes.
You don't have to look so scared. All this is kind of funny in a way, like a farce. But I don't want our wedding night to be a farce. I love you, Adrina. We'll take it easy. Go slow. And you'll be surprised at how naturally things come about.
Lightly, he kissed me with his parted lips.
Your hair looked great before. You didn't have to wash it again. Yet,
I've never seen you look so beautiful. And even if you do look terrified, you take my breath away. Again he kissed me, like he didn't want to stop.
I'll be finished in a flash,
he said, reluctantly parting and entering the bathroom. He didn't have to tell me that. I'd known all along he'd be finished in a flash. I'd have to endure this night and all the nights to come if I was to escape Papa and find the physical rapport every woman was supposed to enjoy with the man she truly loved. Pulling off the peignoir that Arden hadn't even noticed, I slipped between the sheets of that huge bed. Hardly had I arranged myself comfortably when Arden was opening the bathroom door, finished with his shower and what little else a man did to get ready for bed. Quickly he came to the bed, silhouetted briefly before the golden light behind him. To my horror, he wore nothing but a damp bath towel swathed about his slim hips. Whatever dim light there was in the hotel room seemed to concentrate on his damp, shiny skin, forcing me to take notice of his maleness, even when I didn't want to think about it. I just wanted this night over and done with as quickly as possible. I could have screamed from the casual way he took off that towel and tossed it aside. It missed the armchair he aimed for and slid to the floor. Oh, it was already starting. All the sloppy things neat men did after they had a wife to pick up after them. You forgot to turn off the bathroom light.
Because you turned off all the lights in here,
he said easily.
And I like some light. I could open the draperies instead and let in the moonlight.
The scent of toothpaste was on his breath. He lingered by the bed as if wanting me to look him over in the pale rosy nightlight he turned on.
Darling, look at me. Don't keep your head turned. I've waited for this night for years and years. I've gone through all sorts of trouble to make my body muscular and attractive, and not once have you ever said anything to say that you noticed. Do you ever notice anything about me except my face?
I swallowed. Yes, of course I've noticed. Smiling, he put one knee on the bed. Alarmed at what I saw briefly before my eyes took flight again, I drew into a tighter knot inside and inched farther away on the bed.
Adrina, you're shivering. It's not cold in here. Don't be frightened. We love each other. I've kissed you, embraced you, and a few times I've dared a bit more and was quickly reprimanded. There's more to making love than all that combined.
His low voice sounded worried.
You do know what this is all about, I hope.
Yes, I knew. Perhaps too much. I stared toward the windows, sickeningly terrified. The faint and distant sound of thunder filtered into our room. With the approaching electrical storm came a new flood of terror, bringing with it visions of the dark woods overhung with leaden skies. Like it had been in the first Adrina's room, I felt the ominous threat of what lay ahead. Rain, oh please God, don't let it rain tonight. Fraction by fraction he moved closer. I could sense him in every pore. I breathed his special male aroma, felt his nakedness, felt my own vulnerability beneath my nothing nightgown. My skin seemed to wake up and turn into a zillion antennae, each almost invisible hair quivering, warning me to do something and do it quickly. Back, back. I was going back to the rocking chair when it had frightened me, before I learned how to escape the horror of the woods. I felt myself rocking, heard a childish voice singing, saw the spider spinning, saw the eyes of the stuffed animals glinting, heard the floorboards squeaking. The wind was blowing, and soon the lightning would flash and the thunder would crash. Arden said something sweet. Why couldn't I hear clearly?
I love you,
I heard him say again, his voice coming to me as if through a dream. My heart thudded so loudly that I hardly heard him above the noise of all that was happening inside of me. Very close now, Arden turned on his side and tentatively put out his hand to lightly touch my upper arm. His fingertips brushed the left side of my breast. Don't. Don't, I wanted to yell. I lay there speechless with fright, my eyes so wide they began to ache. My mouth became very dry. He cleared his throat and moved so his flesh was against mine, hot flesh, bristly with hair. His lips, even hotter and moist, brushed over mine. I shrank into the pillow, trying to choke back a scream.
What's the matter?
He asked.
Have you stopped loving me already, Adrina?
An excuse came to me from one hole in my memory. Mama saying to Papa she was too tired. I'm just so tired, Arden. It's been a long day. My aunt died this morning. Why can't you just hold me in your arms tonight and tell me you love me over and over again, and then, perhaps, I won't feel so ashamed.
There's nothing to be ashamed of,
he said lightly, though I sensed his tenseness.
You're feeling like lots of brides feel, so I've been told. Since you're my first, and I hope my last, I can't speak from experience.
I wanted to ask him if I was the first girl he'd taken to bed, but I was afraid he'd say no. I wanted him to be just as inexperienced as I was. Then, contrarily, I wanted him to know exactly what to do to make me like what I was sure I would hate. If I really knew he'd waited to have sex with me first, that would prove he loved me enough. His fingers lightly trailed a pattern up and down my arm as he leaned above me, forcing me to close my eyes. Hadn't I heard my own mother say that boys were always more ready than girls for sex? Joking with my aunt at the time, with Aunt Mercy Marie, too, as she sat smiling vacuously on the piano. Now his hands dared more, venturing to fondle my breasts before his fingers arrowed in more specifically. They began to circle round and round my nipples, which were only lightly covered by the thin fabric. I shivered, cringed away, and wearily asked, "Have you ever had sex before?"
"Did you have to ask that at a time like this?"
"Is it the wrong thing to ask?" His sigh sounded exasperated.
"There are differences between men and women, some say. Maybe that's true and maybe it's not. A woman can live out her life happily without sex, so I've heard said. But a man has a buildup of sperm that has to be released in one way or another. The most pleasurable way is with the woman he loves. Loving is sharing, Adrina. Sharing mutual pleasure, not pain, and not shame either."
"Did Billy tell you to say that to me?" I asked hoarsely. His two eager lips burned the hollow of my throat before he murmured,
"Yes. Before we left the cottage, she took me aside and told me to be very tender and slow with you tonight. She didn't have to tell me that. I would have been anyway. I want to do everything right. Give me a chance, Adrina. Maybe it won't be as terrible as you're thinking it will be."
"Why are you saying that? Why do you think I'm thinking it will be terrible?" His half-laugh was tight and small.
"It's pretty obvious. You're like a violin with wires tuned so tight I can almost pluck your nerve endings and hear them twang. But it was you who came running to me today, wasn't it? You did throw yourself into my arms and say, 'Let's get married,' didn't you? You wanted to elope today, not tomorrow or next week. So isn't it natural that I'd think that at last you were ready to accept me as your lover?"
I hadn't thought. I just acted. Escape from Papa had been all that mattered. "Arden, you didn't answer my question."
"What question?"
"Am I the first?"
"All right. If you have to know, there have been other girls. But none that I loved as I love you. Since I decided you were going to be the one I'd marry, I have not touched another girl."
"Who was the first girl?"
"Never mind,"
he said, with his face pressed between my breasts and his hand exploring beneath my gown. I didn't stop him from doing what he wanted to. I clung to my pain. He didn't love me enough. He'd had others, perhaps 100, and he'd always acted like I was his one and only girl. How deceitful, like Papa.
"You're so beautiful, so soft and sweet. Your skin is so smooth,"
he murmured, his breath coming faster, as if all that he did to me was all he needed and nothing I did or didn't do mattered at all. His hand was now beneath my bodice, cupping my breast, kneading it, molding it to the shape of his hand as his lips came down hard on mine. I'd been kissed by him many times before, but not like this. Panic put me back in the rocking chair, made me a child again and terrified of that playroom where awful things came inside and filled me with shame. The lightning flashed and made my nerves jump so that I bucked upwards. Arden took that for beginning passion, for his lust sizzled more, and the shoestring straps of my nightie broke as he pulled it down, baring my breasts for his lips and tongue to play with. I arched my neck and forced my head back into the pillow as I bit down on my lower lip to keep from screaming. I squeezed my eyes together and tried to endure the humiliation of everything he did. Inside, I was sobbing, just like when they'd ripped off the first Adrina's pretty new dress and torn off her silk underclothes. Crying. I was crying, and he didn't hear me or see my tears. My eyes popped open when the next thunder clapped. The lightning lit up the room enough for me to see his handsome face just above mine, rapt-looking, out of himself with the